previously on Red Pilled America.
It was Hunter Biden sleeping with a crack pipe in his mouth.
I assumed that it was his dead brother's computer and he just wanted his memories off of it.
A controversial story reemerged in the mainstream media.
Was Hunter Biden profiting off his dad's work as vice president, and did Joe Biden allow it?
If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
I found out this incredible story about Joe Biden.
Don't seek the help of a foreign government in your election.
I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry.
Where's Hunter?
Hunter Biden's laptop was now the property of John Paul McGovern. Isaac.
I was in trouble.
I don't know what he was doing. I know he was on the board.
The next day, the FBI was at John Paul's front door. I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez.
And this is Red Pilled America, a storytelling show.
This is not another talk show covering the day's news. We are all about telling stories.
Stories Hollywood doesn't want you to hear.
Stories the media mocks. Stories about everyday Americans that the globalists ignore.
You could think of Red Pilled America as audio documentaries, and we promise only one thing. The truth. Welcome to Red Pilled America. We're at the finale of our series of episodes entitled Unfiltered. If you haven't heard parts 1 through 4, stop and go back and listen from the beginning. We're looking for the answer to the question, why is the media afraid of a free speech Twitter? By telling the story of Jack Dorsey's creation and how it drifted away from being the free speech platform.
So in part 4, we met a Wilmington, Delaware albino man named John Paul McIsaac. In late April 2019, the Apple repairman became nervous. Joe Biden had just announced his run for the White House, and that meant trouble for John Paul because he was in possession of Hunter Biden's laptop, and it appeared to have some incriminating files. Aside from personal illicit materials, it included eye-catching financial documents. Hunter had worked for a potentially corrupt Ukrainian energy company, Burisma, while his VP father was point man for American policy in Ukraine. The Bidens claimed nothing was fishy about the arrangement, but the laptop in John Paul's shop said otherwise. When Joe Biden announced his candidacy, the Bidens' Ukraine dealings re-entered the news. President Trump and his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, called for an investigation into the whole affair. That's when the media went into protection mode, inviting Joe Biden's surrogate, Adam Schiff, on air to accuse Trump of an impeachable offense. The feud escalated when Democrats accused Trump of bribing Ukrainian President Zelensky into investigating the Biden's Burisma dealings during a call between the leaders. On September 24, 2019, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi initiated the impeachment process. A day later, a transcript of the call showed that at no time did President Trump tie foreign aid to an investigation into the Bidens. President Zelensky stated that he never felt pressured during the call.
As this controversy monopolized the media, John Paul's anxiety level skyrocketed. You see, Hunter Biden never picked up his laptop. It was now the legal property of John Paul, and it seemed to contradict the Bidens' public statements about their work in Ukraine. The Apple repairman was worried that just having the laptop was putting him in danger. So he reached out to the FBI and eventually connected with an agent Joshua and agent Mike. They listened to John Paul's concerns, but wouldn't take Hunter's laptop. Then something happened. In a December 8, 2019 interview, Joe Biden claimed he knew nothing about what his son did at Burisma. The next day, the FBI was at John Paul's front door. They took possession of the laptop, and the Apple repairman felt relieved. He'd finally gotten the computer into the hands of the authorities. His life could go back to normal. But just as the agents were leaving, John Paul said Agent Mike turned around and uttered, "In their experience, nothing happens to those that don't talk."
The laptop from hell. It was perhaps the most important piece of evidence in the ongoing impeachment proceedings. It included files that potentially proved Trump's concerns about Joe Biden's corruption in Ukraine were legitimate. So, you'd expect this laptop to be handled by the FBI with the highest level of care. If it got the Hollywood screenplay treatment, you'd see Agent Mike, played by actor Nick Searcy, placing the laptop in a briefcase, handcuffing it to his wrist, then whisked away to the FBI's highest of high-tech labs to be analyzed by the country's foremost experts in data analysis and corruption. But government competence seems only to happen in the movies. In the case of the laptop from hell, the moment the FBI took possession of it, things started to get weird. First, according to John Paul McIsaac, the agents that took the laptop began to call him for guidance on how to remove the data from the hard drive.
And then they called me a couple times for technical support. I expected that to be put in an evidence locker and shipped down to a lab outside of Langley or something, and instead they were calling me for help to access the data.
Red flags were going off, but that wasn't the last of it. John Paul said they contacted him periodically to see if someone had come into the shop to claim the laptop.
Like they were almost anticipating somebody looking for it. They did instruct me that if somebody did come in asking for it, that I would stall them and then give them a call so that they could return it.
It was almost as if the FBI were protecting the laptop, not as potential evidence in an impeachment proceeding, but instead to protect the Bidens. As John Paul was getting fishy about the intentions of the FBI, the impeachment process was underway.
On this vote, the yeas are 229, the nays are 198, present is one, Article 2 is adopted.
And there you have it. President Trump has been officially impeached. He doesn't lose his job. That goes now to the Senate to decide that in a trial.
As the trial was just days away, John Paul no doubt thought that the laptop would make a national appearance. It was potential evidence in the biggest trial in America, but it didn't. Instead, another narrative was underway.
They're back. A U.S. tech firm says Russia or Russians working for the government, we don't know, have successfully hacked the Ukrainian gas company at the center of the impeachment case.
Former intelligence agency officials claimed Russian hackers were at it again. But instead of Hillary Clinton, this time they were targeting the 2020 Democrat frontrunner.
They say the attempts to infiltrate Burisma, whose board once included Hunter Biden, began back in early November. Although it's unclear what the hackers were actually looking for, the cyber firm says this, quote, "The timing of the campaign in relation to the 2020 U.S. elections raises the specter that this is an early warning of what we have anticipated since the successful cyber attacks undertaken during the 2016 U.S. elections," end quote.
It was almost as if the intelligence community was anticipating a Burisma data dump around the impeachment trial while the laptop was sitting at the FBI. A few days later, the trial commenced.
We are here today in this hallowed chamber, undertaking this solemn action for only the third time in history because Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States, has acted precisely as Hamilton and his contemporaries feared.
The opening argument was made by Congressman Adam Schiff, the same man that worked with the media a year earlier to create the very narrative at the core of the impeachment.
President Trump solicited foreign interference in our democratic elections, abusing the power of his office to seek help from abroad to improve his reelection prospects at home. And when he was caught, he used the powers of that office to obstruct the investigation into his own misconduct. To implement this corrupt scheme, President Trump pressured the president of Ukraine to publicly announce investigations into two discredited allegations that would benefit President Trump's 2020 presidential campaign. When the Ukrainian president did not immediately assent, President Trump withheld two official acts to induce the Ukrainian leader to comply: a head of state meeting in the Oval Office and military funding. Both were of great consequence to Ukraine and to our national interest and security, but one looms largest. President Trump withheld hundreds of millions of dollars in military aid to a strategic partner at war with Russia to secure foreign help with his reelection, in other words, to cheat.
After almost 3 weeks of arguments, the verdict was put to a vote.
Senators, how say you? Is the respondent, Donald John Trump, guilty or not guilty?
Mr. Alexander, not guilty. Ms. Baldwin. Ms. Baldwin, guilty.
When the votes were tallied, it revealed that the whole affair was just a show trial.
It is, therefore, ordered and adjudged that the said Donald John Trump be, and he is hereby, acquitted of the charges in said articles.
In the last half hour, the U.S. Senate has found President Trump not guilty of abuse of power and the obstruction of Congress in his historic impeachment trial.
The president is acquitted forever. It wasn't even close. The Senate, of course, under the Constitution, needs 67 votes to convict and remove a president from office. It was not close. He has not been removed. He will be reelected.
This is what the end result is.
President Trump flashed the front page headline for the country to see. Senators found him not guilty.
It's called total acquittal.
In the immediate aftermath, President Trump was understandably angry. And in his victory lap, he minced no words on what he thought of the Biden camp.
These are the crookedest, most dishonest, dirtiest people I've ever seen. We've been going through this now for over 3 years. It was evil. It was corrupt. It was dirty cops. It was leakers and liars. And this should never, ever happen to another president, ever.
As the trial came to a close, the Apple repairman started to think he might be in grave danger.
NBC News is now projecting that former Vice President Joe Biden has won a decisive victory in the South Carolina Democratic primary, widely considered a must-win for Biden.
In the 3 weeks following the trial, Joe Biden had successfully rallied Democrat leadership around his candidacy.
NBC News projecting Alabama will go to Joe Biden as he continues his sweep through the South.
The Fox News Decision Desk can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden will win the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Joe Biden, the projected winner in Arkansas.
We're going to call Biden winning Massachusetts.
Overnight, Joe Biden took command with another string of big wins over Bernie Sanders, including the critical state of Michigan, a state that Sanders won 4 years ago.
John Paul McIsaac.
Now I know I'm in trouble because the FBI knows that I had this. And if the FBI is protecting the Bidens, then who's to say somebody's going to say, hey, Joe, there's this kid that's trying to get rid of your son's dirty laundry.
Now, John Paul may not have had the laptop anymore, but this is where an earlier decision paid off. Because in the summer of 2019, he did something smart. To protect himself, he created a clone of the laptop's hard drive and sent it to a friend for safekeeping. If anything were to happen to him, he wanted his friend to hand deliver it to the authorities. Now he needed it for his own security. According to John Paul, he wanted to get that hard drive into the spotlight to protect himself. No one could quietly take him out if the laptop was in the public domain. So shortly after Trump was acquitted, John Paul says he turned to his father and uncle, both retired Air Force colonels, to reach out to members of Congress, think tanks, and even the White House for help.
I have never, ever crossed my mind to go to the press or go to the media. This was something that I felt there was a proper, I always call it the chain of command, to get this to the proper authorities so that they could be acted on, and then I could get some level of protection.
As his father and uncle attempted to connect with the reputable D.C. insider, John Paul's predicament got ratcheted up.
CBS News now estimates that Biden has the delegates needed to officially clinch the nomination.
The former vice president will face off against President Trump in a campaign already upended by the coronavirus pandemic.
I'm a proud Democrat, and I'll be proud to carry the banner of our party into the general election. So it's with great honor and humility I accept this nomination for president of the United States of America.
By the summer of 2020, I wasn't getting a lot of feedback from anyone. Everybody was so afraid of Russian collusion that Congressman's empirical guard kind of prevented us from actually making contact with anybody that would listen.
Welcome back to Red Pilled America. So John Paul thought it was time to step out of the shadows. He decided to throw a Hail Mary himself.
So I reached out to Rudy Giuliani's office in August of 2020.
Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, Bob Costello, reached out to John Paul shortly after. They exchanged a few phone calls, and around late August 2020, John Paul sent Costello a copy of the drive.
And then it was out of my hands at that point. I had gotten it to what I viewed at that point in time, the authorities. This was a lawyer of the President of the United States.
Giuliani and Costello took a few weeks to analyze the hard drive. Then they reached out to Miranda Devine at the New York Post.
And I got a text message from Bob Costello, who is Rudy Giuliani's lawyer. He said, you know, we've got something that we think that you will be interested in. Do you want to talk? And I was like, are you kidding? Yes. And so the next day, I just spent several hours on the phone just talking to Bob Costello and Rudy Giuliani about the copy of the laptop, clone of the laptop that they'd been sent by this MacBook repair shop guy in Delaware. They checked him out. He seemed to be legit. They'd spent 4 or 5 weeks just going through it, trying to authenticate what they could see. And because both Bob Costello and Rudy Giuliani were former prosecutors from the Southern District of New York, they had these sort of forensic legal brains that could ferret out crimes. You know, they can sniff them a mile off. By the time they came to us, they had already identified about 4 or 5 kind of incriminating emails or documents that would make good stories.
So the New York Post team began their own research. They did some due diligence on the laptop files they were given.
My colleague Emma Jo Morris did a brilliant job on that.
They checked with some of the recipients of the emails, and they confirmed they'd indeed received the correspondence. They triangulated the dates on some photos and documents with known public information on Hunter Biden to ensure they fell in the proper time range.
Another colleague, Gabriel Fonrouge, went down to Delaware and interviewed John Paul MacIsaac.
When I reached out to Rudy Giuliani's office and I spoke with Bob Costello, I was very adamant. Rudy was never to even know my name. I was referred to as Bob's guy.
But then on Sunday, October 11th, 2020, John Paul says he was working in his shop.
I have a buddy of mine over. We're having a couple beers. I'm helping him migrate his Mac. And shop's closed. Like, blinds are closed, everything. There's a knock on the door. There's a reporter. I open the door. She's like, yeah, I'm from the New York Post. I'm like, how the hell did you find me? She's like, it's my job. Bob told me you would be here.
Again, Miranda Devine, author of Laptop from Hell.
So it was a flurry of activity pretty much from that Sunday on. And, you know, we had satisfied ourselves that in terms at least of these particular stories that we were going to run, we had nailed it down. It was all legit. And so that was it. We published. The first story we ran was this email from Hunter Biden's Ukrainian paymaster at Burisma, this corrupt Ukrainian energy company. And in this email, he thanks Hunter for the meeting with his father in Washington, D.C. And we didn't know the full extent of that, but it was at least something that tied Joe Biden, when he was vice president, with one of Hunter Biden's most lucrative engagements with shady foreign businesses and oligarchs.
The story included an email where a Burisma executive asked how Hunter could use his influence on the company's behalf. It was a month after his VP father had become the point man in Ukraine. They published the bombshell story, and within hours, the unthinkable happened.
Twitter and Facebook, within hours of the story going live on October 14, 2020, they'd locked our accounts, they'd throttled the story, and then Twitter just locked our account, and they locked it for the next 2 weeks, and they claimed that we had violated their hacked materials policy. What's so dishonest about Twitter in particular was they just dreamed up an excuse, hacked material. I don't know where they got that from.
For those paying attention to this series, this policy has a clear origin. You may remember in the weeks leading up to the 2016 election, WikiLeaks published a drip, drip, drip of the emails of Hillary Clinton's top aide, John Podesta. The emails were allegedly hacked. The Democrats felt that this was one of the primary contributing factors to Donald Trump's victory. So, many believed that Twitter enforcing a so-called hacked materials policy was designed specifically to block an October surprise that would help the Trump campaign. And this wasn't a far-fetched idea because of what occurred just a few weeks earlier.
For years, President Trump has battled to keep the truth about his finances out of the hands of Congress and away from the American public. A sweeping new report from the New York Times shows why. Because while many of you were shelling out money to the IRS every April, the president was not. Not one dime in federal taxes for 10 out of 15 years spanning from 2000 to 2015. This is according to more than two decades of tax records that were reviewed by the paper. And in 2016 and 2017, the years that he did pay, he only paid $750 each year.
The article was published weeks before the New York Post's laptop story. In fact, it was on the eve of the first presidential debate. Joe Biden and debate moderator Chris Wallace even used it to attack Trump.
This guy paid a total of $750 in taxes.
Sir, wait, no. Is it true that you paid $750 in federal income taxes each of those 2 years?
I paid $27 million.
Show us your tax return.
There are federal laws on the books that make it illegal to disclose unauthorized information like tax returns. The New York Times claimed they obtained the returns through someone that had legal access to them, but they gave no other explanation and showed no proof. The returns could have been obtained through a hack. However, when the New York Times posted their story on social media, neither Twitter or Facebook blocked the article from being shared, and Twitter did not lock the New York Times out of its account. Yet when the New York Post published Hunter Biden's emails and clearly explained how they got them from an Apple repairman who acquired them legally, Twitter still decided to shut down the spread of the story. Their hacked materials excuse reeked of political bias.
Big tech weighing in like that, so nakedly exposing and exercising their power, was a surprise because, you know, they'd always been quite crafty about sheathing their claws. But here they were demonstrating that they were willing to use their power against the oldest newspaper in America, the sixth largest by circulation.
Trump grabbed the issue while on the 2020 campaign trail and ran with it.
With Biden today, they take negative posts down almost before they even go up. We've just learned through explosive documents published by a very fine newspaper, the New York Post, that Joe Biden has been blatantly lying about his involvement in his son's corrupt business dealing. And this is a big smoking gun.
Tellingly, the Joe Biden campaign would not definitively say the laptop wasn't Hunter's. Instead, Joe went into hiding, so to speak. During the most pivotal time of the 2020 race, he almost exclusively campaigned from home. And he wasn't the only one that went silent on the laptop. If you turn to the major news networks, not a single one of them covered the story on the first night. The only ones that gave it any attention were independent media and Fox News.
Most of us never imagined it could happen in this country, and yet today it did happen. A major American newspaper published a story, apparently an entirely accurate story, about a presidential candidate. The tech monopolies that control American media feared this story might hurt that candidate whom they favor. So 3 weeks before a national election, they shut the whole thing down. They prevented the public from reading the news. They didn't apologize for doing this. They didn't bother to make up reasonable sounding justifications for it. They just did it, exactly as the Chinese government does. These are monopolies. They have all the power. You have none. They don't have to care what you think, and they don't. This was mass censorship on a scale that America has never experienced, not in 245 years. And it's a threat to all of us. Democracies only function when there is a free exchange of information between citizens. We no longer have that. This is a dark moment.
The oldest newspaper in America, created by Alexander Hamilton, a founding father of our country, was silenced by Twitter. It was a truly astonishing moment. The free speech wing of the Free Speech Party was now acting like the CCP, and the entire mainstream media hardly made a peep about it. The Democrat media complex knew this Hunter and Joe Biden Ukraine story reeked of corruption. They covered it in detail back in 2014 when news first broke of Hunter joining Burisma. But now, with the election just weeks away, the media threw free speech out the window. They wanted, no, they had to have control of the narrative, and they needed Twitter and Facebook to help. The shutdown of the New York Post by Big Tech was so jarring that it even made independent media a bit gun-shy at discussing the story.
It's from the New York Post. We're actually pulling up the New York Post. Twitter, Facebook, censor post over Hunter Biden expose. I wonder if we're going to get shut off if, like, YouTube will pull the stream
down. Let's find out.
Let's keep reading.
Towards the end of the first day that the New York Post published their laptop story, Twitter finally tweeted out a detailed explanation on their actions. Late enough so all of the major networks had an excuse to ignore the story. Twitter was stalling, long enough to give the media time to get their narrative straight, and they were about to dig in on one point in particular, Rudy Giuliani. Welcome back to Red Pilled America. When the New York Post published their initial bombshell story, they made one mistake. They missed blurring out the name of the Apple repair shop in one of the published documents. If you read the fine print in their first article, you could see its name, the Mac Shop. Well, the mainstream media, dying to regain control of the narrative on the story, descended upon the Mac Shop to question John Paul McIsaac, and they were concerned with one angle of the story. A reporter recorded the interactions.
Did you send the copy to Rudy Giuliani's lawyer? Do you know how the copy of the hard drive got to his lawyer?
Why did you re-up it to Rudy Giuliani?
It seems like if there's any risk that might exist, it would have grown, it would have gotten worse in September after you had transferred the information to Rudy Giuliani's attorney.
And it's totally fine if Rudy Giuliani reached out to you, if that's the truth, or if you reached out to him. We just kind of want to know what happened. I think you should just tell the truth because...
I am telling the truth.
I know you're telling the truth, and you've been very helpful for us because we pranged you before this, too. But I guess that is what we care about, right? We can all agree. Giuliani.
Rudy Giuliani had taken down the New York mob. The Democrats blamed him for applying pressure on the FBI in 2016 to reopen the Hillary Clinton private server investigation that contributed to her loss. He was the lawyer of Donald Trump and one of the original people calling for an investigation into Biden's Ukraine dealings. Rudy Giuliani was going to be the villain in the media's narrative, and Twitter and Facebook gave them time to form their approach.
The New York Post says that they got these emails from Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon. Now, this is far from the first time that Giuliani has tried to dig up dirt and promote disinformation on the Bidens. So you have Rudy Giuliani openly working with a known Russian agent.
Rudy basically functioning as a Russian asset by pushing Russian disinformation.
It is clear that this latest effort by Giuliani is raising all sorts of red flags, enough for the FBI to now be looking at this as potentially part of Russia's broader attacks on the U.S.
Rudy Giuliani distributing Russian disinformation. That was the narrative. The media went out on an all-out carpet bomb Russia, Russia, Russia campaign to form the narrative and protect the Democrat nominee.
Serious questions tonight about whether the Russians are using Rudy Giuliani to interfere in the U.S. presidential election.
U.S. authorities are seeing if those emails we just talked about are connected to an ongoing Russian disinformation effort.
It is so obviously disinformation that the person that writes the story won't put their name on it because they know it's a lie.
Hunter Biden's laptop, that whole thing has been fizzling. It looks like it's tied to Vladimir Putin in Moscow.
Disinformation that he knows to be fabricated and supplied by a foreign intelligence service. And despite the warning, he's still doing it.
You have said this entire thing is so obviously a Russian plot.
Those emails are being scrutinized by the FBI as part of a potential disinformation campaign.
Then the media cemented the narrative by bringing in former FBI officials to reinforce their unverified claim.
When you look at this computer store owner in Delaware who allegedly received Hunter Biden's laptop, that is more in line with when you think about somebody who's a useful idiot. That's kind of the entry point that is kind of, a classic indicator of the potential presence of disinformation.
This looks like your classic disinformation campaign.
Eric O'Neill is a former FBI operative.
Steal the information with a cyber attack, get the emails from Hunter Biden's account, and then put them on these laptops that are left at a repair store, and that's how the information is now laundered into the public.
Who do you think is behind this?
Well, the Russians would be my number one guess, if I had to guess.
Again, Miranda Devine.
Clearly, the message had gone out. Do whatever you can to suppress and censor this story. Shortly after they suppressed our story, you had the 51 former intelligence officials came out with that bogus letter.
The letter was signed by over 50 former intelligence officials claiming that the entire Hunter laptop email story had, quote, all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation.
Having not seen the laptop, having not seen any of the material, they used the authority of their former high-ranking positions, and these are people like John Brennan and James Clapper.
And to me, this is just classic textbook Soviet-Russian tradecraft at work.
They used that former authority to tell a lie. What they were were telling the American people was, don't listen to this, it's Russian disinformation. And that's exactly what Joe Biden did when he had his debate a few days later. He used that letter to tell the American people that the laptop was Russian disinformation, therefore our story was. And that got him off the hook.
Joe, they're calling you a corrupt politician.
Nobody.
Hey, President Trump, I want to stay on the issue of race. We're talking about the issue.
Laptop from hell.
President Trump, we're talking about race right now, and I do want to stay on the issue of race. President Trump,
you've just... Can I have to respond to that?
Please.
Because look,
very quickly.
There are 50 former national intelligence folks who said that what this he's accusing me of is a Russian plant. They have said that this is has all the character. Five former heads of the CIA, both parties, say what he's saying is a bunch of garbage. Nobody believes it except his and his good friend, Rudy Giuliani.
You mean the laptop is now another Russia hoax?
That's exactly where he's going.
The FBI knew that the laptop story wasn't a Russian operation because they had the laptop. The media had to have known this as well. The Burisma story wasn't a new story to them. It had been percolating for over 6 years.
There was already a lot of information out there that seemed to confirm what we were saying, and yet there was this lack of curiosity. And it would have become, I think, impossible for those other media outlets to sustain that had it not been for initially the social media giants, which gave them sort of breathing room and a fig leaf not to cover it. And then secondly, 4 days later, after our first story was published, these 51 intelligence guys. And then that just gave everybody the excuse. It got big tech off the hook. It got the rest of the media off the hook. They could just dismiss this and dismiss the New York Post as being agents of the Kremlin, you know, just like Donald Trump.
Just days before Election Day, leaders from the three dominant big tech firms, Google, Facebook, and Twitter, were called to a Senate hearing to discuss the company's influence on the election. In responding to the senators, Mark Zuckerberg made perhaps the most revealing statement. He informed the Senate committee that the FBI, the same organization that had a copy of the laptop for almost a year, warned them of a document dump before Election Day.
You know, one of the threats that the FBI has alerted our companies and the public to was the possibility of a hack and leak operation in the days or weeks leading up to this election. In private meetings, alerts that were given to at least our company, I assume the others as well, that suggested that we be on high alert and sensitivity, that if a trove of documents appeared, that we should view that with suspicion that it might be part of a foreign manipulation attempt.
Let that sink in for a minute. The FBI had the laptop for almost a year. If the laptop was Russian disinformation, wouldn't they have arrested John Paul McIsaac for election interference? Well, they never did. Instead, they allowed former intelligence agency officials to spread false information about the motive behind the New York Post story. If anyone interfered in the 2020 election, it was the intelligence community and the mainstream media. At the Senate hearing, Ted Cruz took a stab at getting answers from Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey.
The three witnesses we have before this committee today collectively pose, I believe, the single greatest threat to free speech in America and the greatest threat we have to free and fair elections. But today, I want to focus my questioning on Mr. Dorsey and on Twitter. Because of the three players before us, I think Twitter's conduct has by far been the most egregious. Mr. Dorsey, does Twitter have the ability to influence elections?
No.
You don't believe Twitter has any ability to influence elections?
No, we are one part of a spectrum of communication channels that people have.
If you don't think you have the power to influence elections, why do you block anything?
Well, we have policies that are focused on making sure that more voices on the platform are possible. We see a lot of abuse and harassment, which ends up silencing people and having them leave from the platform.
All right, Mr. Dorsey, I find your opening answers absurd on their face.
And with his testimony, Jack Dorsey quietly revealed Twitter's role. It had become a pivotal component of the Democrat narrative machine.
A day after Jack Dorsey's Senate testimony, Twitter's chief technology officer went on the In Machines We Trust podcast and confessed to the company's new speech filtering role.
Our role is
not to be bound by the First Amendment, but our role is to...
He said, quote, "Our role is not to be bound by the First Amendment, but our role is to serve a healthy public conversation, and our moves are reflective of things that we believe lead to a healthier public conversation. The kinds of things that we do to work about this is to focus less on thinking about free speech, but thinking about how the times have changed. One of the changes today that we see is speech is easy on the internet. Most people can speak, but our role, which is particularly emphasized, is who can be heard."
Where our role is particularly emphasized is who can be heard.
By Election Day 2020, the media's new narrative machine was an awe-inspiring force to behold.
Election workers in Allegheny County are back to work after pausing counting overnight.
Butler County had to press pause on counting ballots.
Nevada, meanwhile, has stopped counting votes until 9 a.m. on Thursday.
A water pipe has broken in State Farm Arena. State Farm Arena is where they were counting the absentee ballots of Georgia's most populous county. And now the tabulation has stopped.
Good morning, Heather. They did have to press pause overnight. They will be back in a few short hours, expected to resume counting around 8:30 this morning.
Fulton County is now going to stop counting at 10:30 p.m. and will resume their count tomorrow morning.
Election workers stopped counting those mail-in ballots at 10 o'clock. They will be back again tomorrow at 10 a.m.
But the counting in one of that state's biggest counties has stopped. Mike Armstrong is in Pennsylvania. Mike, we're talking about Allegheny County. That's the area around Pittsburgh. What's happening?
CBS News projects that Joe Biden has been elected the 46th president of the United States.
Just as pictures of Hunter and Joe Biden embracing to celebrate their victory littered news media, any narratives around the integrity of the election were quickly and ruthlessly purged. Twitter and the rest of big tech suspended accounts that questioned the results and would eventually purge the Jedi of the Twitterverse himself.
You will never again see a tweet from President Trump. A short time ago, the company suspended him forever.
A new power was unleashed. People who attended the Washington, D.C. protests over the election were purged from social media. Some were even thrown in jail. Experts that challenged the establishment's narrative on COVID-19 were purged from Twitter as well. The Overton window of allowable speech on the former free speech platform had drastically narrowed. But one man was about to take an interest in free speech. Perhaps the first sign of this interest came in early January 2021. The satirical outfit The Babylon Bee tweeted out a picture of Donald Trump with the headline, "Evil Fascist Dictator Censored and Voted Out of Office." Elon Musk replied to the tweet, saying, quote, "A lot of people are going to be super unhappy with the West Coast high tech as the de facto arbiter of free speech," end quote. Surprisingly, Elon started to frequently interact with The Babylon Bee. A bromance was kindled.
He'd been following us for some time and was engaging with our content on a regular basis.
That's Seth Dillon, CEO of the Babylon Bee.
So we knew that he knew who we were and that he liked our content. You know, he had tweeted at one point, he said, "The Babylon Bee is savage." So, you know, he had engaged with us, had praised us. So we knew he was a fan of ours.
Elon seemed to have the same irreverent approach to the establishment as the Babylon Bee. The billionaire continued interacting with the satire site, and then one day in mid-December 2021, the Babylon Bee asked Elon if he'd appear on their podcast. Again, Seth Dillon.
When he actually responded and said, "Sure, let's do an interview, just come to Austin, I'm available this weekend," we didn't expect him to respond or say yes, especially not on such short notice, and to say, "Hey, come out here." I mean, we were within like 48 hours of hearing back from him. We were sitting at a table interviewing him in Austin, Texas.
I guess before we get started, like, maybe you guys could tell me, like, how did the Bee get started, and what's your deal, and why are you in California?
The bromance continued in the weeks and months that followed. But then one day, Musk reportedly noticed that the Babylon Bee hadn't posted to Twitter in a while. Their last post on March 20th, 2022, was a picture of Hunter Biden and an Election Day voting line with the caption, "Nation wishes there was some way they could have known about the Hunter Biden laptop story before the election," end quote. Just a few days earlier, The New York Times had essentially acknowledged the New York Post's Hunter Biden laptop story was accurate, and the Babylon Bee was doing what it does, poking fun at the media establishment. but it was their next post that got them suspended. They mockingly awarded the transgender government official Rachel Levine with the title Man of the Year. Elon reached out to the Babylon Bee to see why they stopped posting. When he learned they'd been suspended for a joke, it may have been the straw that broke the camel's back. Elon took to Twitter and posted a poll that asked the question, quote, "Free speech is essential to a functioning democracy. Do you believe Twitter rigorously adheres to this principle?" End quote. Roughly 70% of 2 million voters answered no. A day later, he tweeted, quote, "Given that Twitter serves as the de facto public town square, failing to adhere to free speech principles fundamentally undermines democracy. What should be done?" End quote. Something was brewing. Then on April 4th, 2022,
Elon Musk has bought nearly 10% of Twitter for an investment of around $3 billion.
10 days later, Elon upped the ante.
Elon Musk took the Twitterverse by storm today with an unsolicited bid to buy the social media platform. Musk made billions with electric cars and reusable rockets and says he now wants to turn Twitter into the world's, quote, platform for free speech.
In an interview at the TED conference later that day, Elon explained why he wanted to buy Twitter.
Twitter has become kind of the de facto town square. So it's just really important that people have both the reality and the perception that they are able to speak freely within the bounds of the law. It's important to the function of democracy. It's important to the function of the United States as a free country and many other countries, and to help freedom in the world more broadly than the U.S. I think it's civilizational risk is decreased if the more we can increase the trust of Twitter as a public platform.
The thought of free speech returning to Twitter sent the mainstream media into a state of panic.
Elon Musk has never been an advocate for free speech. He's an advocate for speech without consequences.
And when he's asked whether he's a free speech absolutist, and he says yes, I guess what does that mean?
When Elon Musk says, wow, this is about free speech, it seems to me that it's about free speech of straight white men.
If you get invited to something where there is total freedom for everybody, do you actually want to go to that party?
And when news of Elon's takeover hit the Twitter staff, Vijaya Gaddi, the Twitter exec that censored the Hunter Biden laptop story on the platform, reportedly cried during a staff meeting. When Elon heard about the tears, he responded stating, quote, "Suspending the Twitter account of a major news organization for publishing a truthful story was obviously incredibly inappropriate." Which brings us back to the question, why is the media afraid of a free speech Twitter? The answer is simple. Because the media doesn't want you to hear the news unfiltered. It wants total control of the narrative. Going back to 2011, Andrew Breitbart and his band of rebel journalists used Twitter to bypass the media filter and force the resignation of Anthony Weiner. Gamergate built on this tactic, using Twitter to bypass the media filter and expose the feminist corruption that had infiltrated the gaming industry. Donald Trump and WikiLeaks continued to evolve the technique by using Twitter to bypass the media filter and force the truth into the public conscience. By 2016, Twitter had become a way for the public to hear the truth unfiltered, without the spin and misdirection of the Democrat media complex. So the media took steps to regain control of the narrative machine. They pressured the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party to rethink the entire notion of free speech. In response, Twitter created a trust and safety council that was purportedly created to make the platform healthier. But in reality, Twitter set up a new way to purge unauthorized narratives, like the Hunter Biden laptop story. In essence, Twitter had abandoned its free speech roots and became arguably the most important player in the Democrat narrative machine. That's why the mainstream media hates a free speech Twitter. They want to play on an uneven playing field because that's the only way they can win. They don't want you to hear the news unfiltered, and they'll do anything to keep their monopoly on the narrative machine.
It looks like the Fed has now opened up an investigation on Elon's purchase of Twitter. What a surprise!
Red Pilled America is an iHeartRadio original podcast. It's produced by me, Adriana Cortez, and Patrick Carelci for Informed Ventures. Thanks for listening.